All right, joining us now is Senator Frank Nicely. He is in the Senate here. He sits on the Commerce Commission, as well as the Transportation Commission, I believe. But you also, I think, are the number two on the Commerce Commission. And as part of that, he's been very interested in trying to make sure that Tennessee is going to stay fiscally sound and have an option for people in case the Federal Reserve takes us off the rails, which looks like it's starting to happen. But I thank you for joining us, Senator.
It's always a pleasure, Dave. It's a lot to talk about.
And we've had
a good session. We, in spite of the Tennessee 3 and the excitement they caused, and you know, I started out in minority party, and when you're in the minority party, especially a super minority, about all you do is throw bombs.
Yeah.
And wreak havoc, and those boys were really good. I admire their ability to cause trouble. I don't agree with the thing they stand for, but they are good.
I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about the August special session. But I got to give you credit, because as DeSantis was talking about Florida, he said, you know, Florida has the second lowest per capita debt of any state. I said, I bet the first one is Tennessee. And I looked it up, and it was. So you guys have done a great job in terms of keeping taxes low and spending low, and we got the best record in terms of per capita debt, so we want to keep it that way.
Well, David, the Democrats ran this state for 150 years.
Yeah.
And they were the old school Democrats, the old Southern gentleman Democrats, the pro-business Democrats. They're all gone now. None of them left. And they, the state almost went broke during the Great Depression, and they were determined not to let that happen again. And I've got a lot of admiration for some of the old-time Democrats that I knew when I first went there in 1988. And they did a great job. When we inherited the state 11, 12 years ago, we were in pretty good shape. The difference was the Democrats would raise some kind of little tax every year, your marriage tax, your hunting license. They just couldn't, and we were just barely getting by, but they didn't waste money. But when we took over, we started cutting taxes. Art Laffer told us to, if you want more money, cut taxes. Well, we believed him, and we tried it, and it worked. And within a couple of years, we would have $1 billion surpluses. So we inherited a state in pretty good shape, and we inherited a good state and made a great state out of it.
I agree. Yeah. And so you're trying to get some of that surplus into something that's going to be kind of a hedge against bad actions or incompetence by the Federal Reserve, trying to get them to put more and more of that into gold. You've had some success. Where do they stand in terms of Tennessee State owning gold and the efforts to create a bullion there? And of course, we want to talk about the efforts to set up a state bank, or as you call it, Tennessee Reserve System. But let's talk first about the gold. How are they doing in terms of taking some of that surplus and putting it into gold?
Great. We passed the bill this year. I sponsored it, and luckily we passed it. The buttholes, we carried it in the House. It allows the treasurer to buy gold and silver. Mm-hmm. And we've been working on the treasurer for 7 or 8 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. And he wrote the bill, and he put in there what I thought might possibly be a poison pill. It set up on appropriation. And but rather than try to change it, I thought we better run with what we had. So we did, and then we asked the Speaker of the Senate about it. And he said, oh, that's no problem. Said everything's appropriated. The rainy day fund is appropriated. You know, the retirement fund, everything's appropriated. So he said, that's no problem. So we got that passed. The Speaker of the Senate, Randy McNally, doing a great job. They're having a meeting on June 8th, and they will decide at that time how we're going to move forward on this gold and silver. And we're working with a group up in Greenville, Tennessee called Artisan, ZN on the end. It's an old zinc company. They made zinc jar lids back in the old days when the cannon jars had zinc lids. That's how they got started. And of course that played out. Now they make pennies, zinc pennies, $7 billion a year for the feds.
Wow.
And there's some talk about doing away with the pennies. So if they do away with pennies, these boys need somewhere to go. So they want to become the company that makes silver rounds, troy ounce rounds for the various states and half rounds. And they want to build a facility and have a depository. Hopefully that could be the place where if you wanted to pay your taxes in gold and silver, hopefully you could go to them. They could ask that, make sure it's real. Mm-hmm. They could accept your gold and silver and give it to the state, and the state could send the county the money. We tried to, we're working on making gold and silver legal tender. We're going to have a study committee this summer and talk more about that. Other states have done it, but we've got lots of questions from other people. I mean, we don't have the question, but other people have the questions. And we're moving in the right direction. I had about four different states, southern states, that are interested in what we're doing. And we're going to Charleston in July with the Southern Legislative Council. And we're going to try to get, Catherine's going to be there, Catherine Austin Fitz. We're going to try to talk to some of these other states and get a compact with these other states to where we can all get on the same page. So if we issue a dollar and Mississippi issues a dollar, we would honor their dollar, they'd honor ours. Catherine worries about financial transaction freedom.
Yes.
And some of these routes that we have to use to pay everybody are entangled with the Federal Reserve routes. And we want to get our routes, we want to have an alternative set of routes where if the feds try to stop everything, then we'll have routes where we can pay our retirees, pay our help, and transfer money between these compact states without the feds. Now, we're not wanting to leave the union. We're wanting to get in a position of strength to where we can show the union, listen, if you don't keep your end of the bargain, we'll move on without you, but we want to stay with you.
That's right.
But we want you to do the right thing.
Well, and of course,
they're not holding up their end of the bargain.
Yeah, the Constitution says states aren't going to use anything except gold and silver anyway. So it's a bit awkward for them if they want to start playing legal games with things like that. But what about the approach that DeSantis took in terms of UCC? Has there been any thought or talk about doing something like that here in Tennessee? Because he basically reversed what. Well, he basically reversed what.
I don't know too much about.
Sorry, go ahead. You don't know much about
it. Know too much about what DeSantis. I do know that, like you said, he doesn't like CBDC, which we don't like either. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes CBDC, central bank digital currency. And the central bank digital currency doesn't like Bitcoins and other crypto. So one's centralized and one's not centralized. And the one that's centralized doesn't like the one that's not centralized. I like DeSantis. I like a lot of things that he says. To me, DeSantis has three problems: Harvard, Yale, and Jeb Bush. DeSantis is three big problems.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's got.
But other than that, he's fine, young man.
I understand. Well, what he did was, and I think last time we talked, you had Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota, said she went on Tucker. That's how far back it's been. Tucker's been gone for a month, but she went on with Tucker, and she said it was being floated around to about half of the states. The idea that was going to, they were going to put in the UCC, the Universal Commercial Code, that crypto was not going to be allowed, but it would explicitly embrace CBDC. She said, I vetoed that, but it's been put out to a lot of different states, and people need to be on the lookout as to what's happening in their state. Shortly after that, DeSantis did the opposite. What he did was he said, well, we're going to stop CBDC, and we're going to enable crypto. So I was just wondering if there was any talk about that UCC approach in Tennessee. I guess not. People haven't talked about that.
There was a bill. There was a bill introduced, and we realized what it was, and we made sure they pulled the bill. It did not pass in Tennessee. There was a bill introduced to do that, and we caught on to it pretty early.
Good.
You know, the amazing thing, this Tennessee legislature is a, it's an interesting bunch of people. I mean, it's if you're not, you can't explain it to anyone who's never been there. You're just wasting your time. But we've got some pretty sharp characters down there that pay attention. And
that's good.
You would be impressed with how they do a lot. They do crazy things every now and then. But at the end of the day, we do more good things than we do crazy things.
That's good. So but you guys caught
that many people up all winter long.
You guys caught that trap. You guys caught that trap. So, as we look at the candidates coming out, you know, DeSantis is against it. It's good to see that we had RFK Jr. on the other side, because now it's a bipartisan thing. We don't want this to be, you know, something that becomes partisan, so everybody opposes it or supports it simply because it's in their party. And then Ramaswamy has also come out for it, but a lot of the other candidates have not. They have either been silent or in support of CBDC. So that's concerning. That's why it's important for us to do something at state level, important for us to try to have a parallel system. And I loved what you did when you said you're going to call it the Tennessee Reserve System, because when you call it a public bank, the small and medium-sized banks get concerned about it. They think you're going to compete with them, and it's not about competition with them, is it?
No, it's about supporting them. But in Tennessee, we have what we call the Tennessee Investment Pool, and we may have $30 billion in it at a time, and we loan that money to banks, small local banks. Mm-hmm. We'll buy their CDs. They need money. Well, we'll buy CDs, give them some money short term. We can, and it works real good, and it's not a bank. See, banks, if we create a bank, banks have rules, regulations, restrictions, and are hamstrung. They do this, they can't do that. But this investment pool is controlled by the treasurer. The legislature elects the treasurer. If he gets out of hand, we'll pick somebody else. The people elect the legislature. Mm-hmm. So it's like an indirect election. Mm-hmm. Tocqueville really liked indirect elections, by the way. He thought that was the best way to go. Elect some good people and then let them elect some excellent people.
Right.
But by doing it with letting the treasurer be in control of it, we get out from under all these rules and regulations that the banking industry has been saddled with through the years. Mm-hmm. And we can pretty much do anything that they could do. We can do anything they can do. We can call it the Tennessee Reserve System. That's something everybody seems to, this actually would be a Tennessee system, and it would actually be a reserve, unlike the Federal Reserve System, which is not federal and has no reserve.
Right. That's right. So you do have already something that has a lot of the elements of, let's say, the North Dakota State Bank and that.
We do. We basically have the equivalent of North Dakota State Bank, except you can't make deposits, and but they can make loan to banks. The main thing the state that North Dakota Bank does is supports its local banks. They have more local banks and credit unions per capita than any other state. Mm-hmm. That's because the local banks have an option. They can go with the Federal Reserve, or they can go with the Bank of North Dakota. They've got an option. Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest thing to explain to these local banks. And I think the problem is, I think the Federal Reserve comes in and sours the well on us, feeds them a lot of nonsense. You know, when North Dakota started its bank, the Federal Reserve was just 6 years old and didn't have the lobbyists to send around to North Dakota and lobby the legislature. So they were able to get it pushed through. Now then, the Federal Reserve is so powerful, they can come in here with some slick-tongued lobbyists and sour the well on us. But since we've already got this investment pool and we're happy with it, we know how it works, mm-hmm. I think we're in pretty good shape.
Well, that's good. That's good. You know, I just saw this article in New York City. They're taking the ESG, the environmental and societal governance rules, to the local banks. And they're saying, we're not going to do business with you anymore unless you guarantee to us that you're going to follow our rules in terms of climate. You're going to follow our rules in terms of gun control and things like that. So they're putting, you know, all kinds of financial pressure on the system in order to enact what they want to do. And I guess that's one of the reasons why it's important for us to have, certainly to have politicians that are not going to do that type of thing, but also to have this parallel system that's there, because that could very easily come from Washington as well and put these banks out of business, because that's what the New York City is trying to do. Capital One, Key Bank, some big banks there that they've currently got tens of millions of dollars with. They said, you're not going to get another cent from us. And these banks are saying, that's fine. We're not going to comply with it, which is kind of surprising. These two in particular, they had five banks. They were completely sound in terms of fiscal audits, but they're putting this kind of social governance on them.
Well, what can I say? I mean, That's just one more reason why people are moving from New York to Tennessee.
Exactly. You know? Well, let's talk a little bit about this August session that has been called by the governor. I call it Lee's surrender. So what is in there? And do you think he's going to get this through? I mean, didn't he call a special session once before and then he didn't get what he wanted? And so my understanding was he was engaging everybody on a one-to-one basis to make sure that he had the votes to do whatever he wanted so he wouldn't be embarrassed again. So that's my question. What does that look like? What is on the agenda for the special session? And do you think that it's going to pass?
Well, supposedly he's got some kind of version of red flag laws, which takes away due process, and mm-hmm. it's not going to pass. I mean, the House told him it wasn't going to pass. The Senate told him it wasn't going to pass. He wants to do it anyway. He's setting up a dangerous situation. Now, these protesters are from out of state. See, when we have a regular session, everybody else is in session. But in August, nobody's in session. So all these crazies from these other states can all come here and protest us. And then they've already announced that they're going to have armed security. Well, we've already had people announce out here in the countryside that they're going to come down and protect us. So what could possibly go wrong?
That's one of the things, you know, it happened the week after I went there. And, you know, to watch that, I thought that it was pretty amazing. I called it the Tennessee insurrection because they got much further than anybody did on January the 6th. They got their hands on legislators. They were pushing, they had police, state police were using themselves as bodyguards, essentially, but they were getting shoved. And they kept their cool. They didn't come after the crowd. They didn't send out anybody there with, shields and body armor to engage people because that would have just escalated it. I thought it was more than what we saw really at January 6th, because even though you didn't have the physical combat, they were shoving legislators and they got right up there to them. So I thought it was a very dangerous thing. I thought it was amazing that these three legislators got down there and took over the floor with the bullhorn and all the rest of that stuff. I liked the comment of one guy said, "Hey, if you got a problem, file a bill." That's the way this works.
Well, one lawyer, you don't want lawyers in legislature, maybe one or two to ask a question, but they overthink things. They try to think too much. And mm-hmm. We had a young lawyer down that switched his vote on the lady from lady legislator from Knoxville, Gloria Johnson. And so that's when they didn't remove her, which she probably should have been removed, mm-hmm. then that made it look racist. But And then the northern states try to say that Tennessee's a racist. So what I tell my Yankee friend from up in the frozen tundra, I say Tennessee is the only state in the nation where a young black graduate, high school graduate, boy or girl, or any child in Tennessee can go to 2 years of tech school or 2 years of community college for free, absolutely mm-hmm. free. And the last 2 years, they get the Hope Scholarship, which is $4,000 or $5,000 toward the last 2 years. So does when Tennessee sending young black children of any color to college for free, does that sound like a racist state? We're the only state in the nation that mm-hmm. does that. Mm-hmm. You can give Governor Haslam credit for that. I had my doubts when it first started. I thought, well, these kids need a little skin in the game. Mm-hmm. But it's actually working pretty good. It's not being taken advantage of the way it should. I mean, there's no reason why a high school graduate doesn't go to tech school and learn to be a plumber, heat and air, whatever, diesel mechanic, or go on to be a lawyer or a talk show host or a mm-hmm. farmer or whatever he wants to do. There's no reason. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely not a racist state. But some of our northern friends like to label us that.
Well, it is, as you point out, it is, they're creating a flashpoint there. And you have to ask yourself, what is going on? I saw some comments from NBC. They had a quote from Ramesh Akbari, the Democrat minority leader of the Senate. I guess you know who that is.
He's a fine young lawyer, black lawyer from Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Said, and, it really is starting to feel like we're on the same team with the governor. And then, you had a spokesperson for Gabby Gifford's gun control organization essentially saying the same thing. What he's doing here is commendable. It's an act of political courage. Is it, or is it an, is he trying to virtue signal to the left? I don't, is it, you don't know yet exactly what the bills are, or have they told the legislature?
No, we don't know. One strategy we have is when he opens up the code, he will limit the special session to a certain section of the code. Mm-hmm. One strategy is we'll introduce bills that open up that same section, and then we can, then we can push our bills instead of his bills. Another strategy is when we gavel us in, we make a motion to adjourn, takes 66 votes, or two-thirds vote the first day, simple majority the second day and the third day, and go back home. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the governor can call us in, but he can't keep us there.
He's not a colonial governor, right?
No.
Well, that's good. That's good. So I guess, so you don't know what it is. And did he give you a call to talk to you to see if you,
well, he's invited me to the residence. I was going to be on vacation that day. Luckily I could go another day, I guess, but you know, that same week, that was a terrible thing. 6 people killed plus the shooter. Mm-hmm. The day before, we had 6 people killed in a car wreck on I-24, 3 kids and 3 adults. We had 9 people killed in a helicopter crash up at Fort Campbell, and we had 21 people killed in a tornado. Now, that weatherman didn't cause that tornado any more than those guns caused that shooting.
But you know what they'll tell you is that the SUV caused the tornado, right? It caused the climate change.
Well, I think there were 8 people in that car. I guess what it was. It was a sedan, and it flipped, threw people out of the car, and three kids and 3 adults were killed in the car wreck. And what does that show? Life's risky.
That's right.
I mean, every day you get up and feel good, you just thank the good Lord that he's going to give you another day. But before this happened, the governor had in his budget, I'll give the governor a little credit here. Before this happened, he had put enough money in the budget, I think $223 million, to provide a SRO, security agent, for every school that doesn't have one. Mm-hmm. And about $14 million of that was for private schools. And the rest of it was buying bulletproof glass and everything else we need. And so it's not like we haven't done anything. 10 years ago, I passed a bill to allow the teacher to take training and be armed in the school. And I allowed them to schools to hire retired law enforcement, which mm-hmm. they can hire at a fraction of what an active law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And a few schools have done it, but not a lot. But what we have now, talking to the sheriff the other day, we have these magnetic locks on the school doors. And the teachers have got little thumbnail size magnets and put in there to keep the door open, to keep it from locking. So when some kid goes to the restroom, the teacher doesn't have to get up and go open the door to let her back in. Mm-hmm. Well, same thing happened in Texas. They had a automatic locking door, and well, the teachers had left it open. Mm-hmm. So what good is it for the legislature to spend all this money on this high-tech security, and the locals circumvent it by putting magnets in the doors or propping the door open, let a little air in? You know, we're all in this thing together, and it. The only thing that's going to stop a bad person with a gun is a good person with a gun.
That's right. That's right.
You can't blame the guns. If there's more guns in this country than our people, if the guns were involved in it, we'd all be dead. They don't kill us.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Going back to your analogy of the car, I talked about the Waukesha Christmas parade where you had a guy using his SUV. It wasn't an accident. Using his SUV to target people. He wasn't didn't happen to just drive into a crowd. He was, running them down. And so, you know, what are you supposed to do after that? Are you supposed to ban Fords? Are you supposed to ban SUVs? Do you ban automatic transmissions or power steering? You know, and that's what they do with the guns. Whenever something like that happens, they don't look at the person. And that's a big part of the problem with red flag gun laws as well. It's not just if you got somebody who is a murderer, they can use their bare hands to kill somebody.
A hatchet.
Yeah, more people kill with bare hands than with anything else, pretty much. So they could use their bare hands. The person is the problem, and we have to give due process to people. So, you know, none of this, to me, the red flag stuff is really just a non-starter. I think what you did in terms of allowing teachers who get training and that type of thing to carry guns, I think that is by far the most effective thing, because you have somebody there who is going to be in a situation where they're defending their own life and also the life of the kids that are there. It isn't even a situation where you've got a school officer who has to put his life at danger to save other people. That's a heroic thing. And there are a lot of people who will do that, but there's some people that have decided that they don't want to do that, like at Uvalde and at the, you know, Parkman Douglas school there in Florida. So sometimes people will look at that and say, well, I don't want to be a hero. But if you're in this classroom and you're a teacher and you know how to use that thing, that's not being a hero. That's just self-preservation. So I think that's the most effective way to do it.
Well, you got to admire these 3 young police officers who were there in 14 minutes. They didn't know each other prior to this. They went in there. They'd been trained. They fell in just like they were a team and ran in there, ran to the bullet fire and took her out.
Yeah.
And compare that to Texas and Florida.
That's right.
You know, my wife's a Texan. You live in Texas a long time. You don't have these Texans brag all the time. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, they did it the right way. They did. That's very heroic what they did. And that's what I'm saying.
It is.
You got three incidents here, and one of them, they acted quickly and heroically. The other two, they didn't. And so that's that. You know, it's very important. Like you had the law that you sponsored there for teachers to take the place. You know, it also occurs to me that before the special session starts, there's going to be a lot of grief with this pistol brace rule that's been put out by the ATF. And I think that's going to really activate the gun people on that side of the issue. I know they've already put out, the left has already put out a call, as you point out. They want people to come. I was, covering the fact that they were giving sessions and telling people how to hector legislators, how to embarrass them, and putting out a call for all these activists to come. So that's going to be one side of it. But I think that the people who want to support the Second Amendment are going to be pretty upset about this pistol brace rule that's been put out by the ATF. Is there anything in Tennessee that would that anybody's talking about that would get in the way of the ATF or executive orders from the president doing infringement of the Second Amendment, like the pistol brace or like the bump stocks and things like that?
Well, see, I passed a bill last year, I think it was, that made pistol braces legal in Tennessee. Mm. So T-Rex Arms, shout out to them out in West Tennessee. They make lots of holsters and braces and what they know. So it's they're illegal federally, but in the state won't stop you from having it because we don't have to enforce federal law.
Good. Yeah, that's right.
And that's one of our best ways out on these things. We just make it legal in Tennessee and it's illegal federally. So if the feds want to take up these braces, they're going to have to come do it because our sheriff, our TBI can't do it because we made it illegal. It is legal to own one in Tennessee.
That's great. That's great.
So a few years ago, we passed a bill that said this, no state personnel, money, or energy can be used enforcing a federal gun law that is more strict than our state gun law. So we kind of real proactive there. We got ahead of them a little bit.
You did. Absolutely. That's great. And, of course, that's called non-commandeering, and that's been established and supported by the Supreme Court, that the feds can't come in and order local law enforcement to enforce laws that if they don't want to enforce those laws, but you made it even more forceful by shutting it down at the state level. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with, as now everything is rolling down with the masks and all that hysteria and everything. Is there anything in Tennessee law that is going to stop the public health officials, bureaucrats from doing that kind of stuff again? Business mandates on customers or on employees. Is there anything like that? Because I know that in the wake of, we had 9/11, 2 months before that, they had their first germ game. They called it Dark Winter. And then a week after 9/11, they had the anthrax attack. And then 2 months later, they put out model legislation to all the states. And a lot of them, passed a lot of the different things that they wanted passed. And then they had their annual practice games for 20 years. But what is the situation in Tennessee in terms of legislation that supports the public health officials? How did that work? Since I wasn't here when that was going through, how did that work out?
We passed a bill where it's illegal for a business to ask a customer or an employee their vaccination status.
Good, good, good. That's excellent.
Dave, we've done so many good things.
Yeah.
But the liberal press won't report on them, and we don't have newspapers anymore.
That's why I want to get you here, because I'm looking at this stuff, and it's like, wait a minute, are we going to go through all this stuff again? You guys have already taken care of it. That's great news. That's good news. Let's talk a little bit about, the CBDC. We understand the control that's involved with that, and all of the ID aspects of it, how dangerous that is. But, there's a lot of different ways that they can go. The way I look at it, CBDC is the one that takes us to where they want to go the fastest. It's like the direct express route. But there's other ways that they can do it through the back door. I was very concerned to see the mandate for E-Verify. Now, E-Verify has been around for a while, and it's been voluntary. People did not have to comply with it. In Florida, DeSantis and the Republicans put it through as a mandate. And I thought they kind of got it backwards. It seems to me like you would want to stop the welfare state for people who are foreign citizens and here illegally. You'd want to stop the welfare state before you'd start trying to stop them from working, but it makes me very concerned that we'd have to get government permission to get a job, and that it would be yet another form of ID, another form of tracking what we do. What is the situation on E-Verify in Tennessee? Do you know?
You know, I don't really know. I'm not as the legal immigrants. I like legal immigrants. They work, they pay taxes, go to Walmart and on Saturday and you see them shopping, mm-hmm. they're spending money and are being taxed. Mm-hmm. Tennessee operates on a sales tax. We don't have an income tax. We don't have a hauled income tax. So these illegals, when they go to Walmart or when they buy a new lawnmower and a trailer and a truck to come out here and mow the yard, they paid sales tax on all that. Mm-hmm. So this a little legal immigration is good. Illegal, bad. Mm-hmm. But what we've got now is not, that's an invasion. What we've got now going on is an invasion. That's not immigration. And that's a terrible end of it. You know, we're a melting pot, but you put enough cold water in boiling water, it'll kill it all at once. You just,
right.
You can just melt so much at once. And I'm afraid that they're overwhelming the boiling pot right now.
Even the people who call themselves sanctuary cities or sanctuary states, they're saying, wait a minute, stop sending us people. We can't handle that. And they're only getting a small percentage of what's coming across the border in Texas. So it clearly is something that nobody can handle. And yet you see states like California coming out and saying, well, now we're going to give them unemployment. You know, so if you come here without a job, you can collect unemployment. That happened at the same time that Florida is saying, we're not going to let you work. That just didn't make any sense to me. I talked to a guy who was about criminal justice, and he was talking about waves of immigration and waves of crime. And he said, you know, in the late 19th century, the early 20th century, we had these big waves of immigrants coming from Europe, and they were so many of them, they were sleeping, a lot of them, in the police stations because they didn't have anywhere to go. There wasn't any welfare system to help anybody when they came here. They were going to make it on their own, work hard, and they were going to earn every penny that they had. And I don't have a problem with that. What I think is the problem is the welfare magnet that's pulling people in. And so when you have states like California saying, we're going to give you, even though they're insolvent, we're going to give everybody unemployment, even if you're a foreign citizen. You have Illinois giving other benefits to people, even though they are overspending. They're going to give all kinds of benefits to people who are foreign citizens. This is a magnet that's going to pull people in, regardless of what you do at the border, if you're going to have that. But to me, the work aspect of it, that is something that has been there as part of the melting pot. And so I think that, you know, you're right. We can't be, we can't sustain this mass of people that are coming in here. But we got to understand what's pulling them in. And I think that's one of the good things. Hopefully there's not a giant welfare magnet here in Tennessee, like there is in Illinois, New York, and California. That's where they're going to have the biggest problems, I think.
Well, Illinois and California, you have retired state employees making $500,000 a year retired. Illinois, you have them making $350,000 retired. We don't have any state employees making that much work, much less retired.
Yeah.
How they think they can, what are they thinking? I mean, I don't know. I don't understand how they think.
Well, they got saved with all the COVID cash there. They were about to go bankrupt. And then when the pandemic was rolling out, they got all this free COVID cash, and that kicked the can down the road for another couple of years, but they went through that real quickly. And so now they're in financial straits again. But
well, that's, you know, Tennessee has, we had $70 billion invested to take care of our retirees. Of course, it's down to about 61 now. But what's even worse is by the feds printing money with all this inflation, they're bailing out Illinois and California, and they're stealing the purchasing power from our retirement fund.
That's
our
right.
Retirement fund won't buy near as many bags of groceries this year as it did last year, even though we still got $61 billion in it. That $61 billion won't buy as many bags of groceries as $61 billion would last year. So they figured out a way to steal our savings.
That's right.
Benjamin Franklin talked about inflation being an invisible tax, and it is. They're stealing our purchasing power, and they're stealing the money that our retirees have earned and invested over the years by this inflation.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's really concerning, because it looks like that could get out of control. And that's one of the reasons why I know that you've been working so hard trying to get open up channels for people and for the state to have gold, which is going to be there as a hedge against that kind of inflation. And it's one of the reasons why they're out there trying to shut down any competition right now, focusing on crypto. They say that we don't want to have any proof of work that's there. We're just going to have essentially crypto that is a fiat. It's going to be proof of stake. This is worth what it is because we say it's worth what it is. So they just want to flip this over to a digital form of the fiat currency that the Fed's been running on us. And that's not really going to solve anything. It's just going to put more chains, digital chains, and surveillance on each and every one of us.
Well, you remember the old Austin Powers shows, and his nemesis was Dr. Frickin' Evil. And that's a long, long time ago. Well, there is a Dr. Evil in the world. I mean, there's several of them, Soros and different ones around. And they're trying to take over the world with this central bank digital currency. The fly in the ointment is the American South and armed citizens. Mm-hmm. Now, they can't take over until they disarm us. Mm-hmm. So that's a big push on these school shootings. So there are people, I've got intelligent friends that thinks the FBI is behind some of these school shootings, grooming these kids, these shooters. They get on the internet, they find a kid that's mentally unstable. Mm-hmm. Where did this girl get all the money to buy the guns? In Texas, where'd that boy didn't have a job? Where'd he get the new pickup truck and all and $5,000-$6,000 worth of guns all of a sudden? Go in there and do this. So there's Dr. Evil's trying to take over. Catholic calls him Mr. Global.
Yeah.
And they work together, Mr. Global and Dr. Evil. But they can't take over until they get the guns out of our hands and they subdue the American South. Well, we're not going to let that happen. Mm-hmm. We don't want to secede from the Union. We don't want to cause any trouble. The best way to save the Union is show the Union that the South is strong. We're not going along with you. And I've said for years, if America is saved, it'll be by the states. It won't be by the feds.
That's right.
The states have to do it. And America, the amazing thing, the founding fathers gave the states everything we need to take control. We just need leadership, backbone, and perseverance and get the job done. But
that's right.
We can call our congressman in. We can redistrict our congressman every 2 years. Supreme Court says we have to redistrict them every 10 years, but we can redistrict them every 2 years.
Oh, I didn't
we
know
call
that.
Our we can call our nine congressmen in, set them down at the Capitol, say, now listen, young man, here's what we want you to do, and here's what we want you to not do. And by the way, here's a map of your district next year if you don't do what we think. We put nine of them in three districts and have a new set of congressmen. And as far as our senators go, I've had this bill several times to let them, instead of having a primary, 17th Amendment says you have to have an election for U.S. senators, but it doesn't address how you select your nominees. Mm-hmm. So we could let the state legislature be the caucus that nominates our U.S. senators. The Democrats could nominate their nominee, mm-hmm. Republicans to nominate our nominee. They run against each other in November, and that would satisfy the 17th Amendment. But the fact that we nominate them, they would pay attention to the states. See, originally the Senate was supposed to be the state's house.
That's right.
The House of Representatives was a people's house. Mm-hmm. Well, now then, both houses are the people's house, and the states get very little respect. But if we were starting nominating our U.S. senators,
yeah, that's great.
Think what that would do.
Well, that's a great idea. That's a great idea because I always thought that was, you know, as you point out, that was there to break the power of the states, and we need to have that kind of division.
I got that bill to the Senate floor one time. Of course, I had a weak House sponsor, but I'll probably bring it back again.
Oh, you should. That's a great idea.
Now the average knee-jerk reaction from is that people say, "Well, you're taking away my right to vote." I said, "No, I'm giving your Constitution back." I said, "You're still going to vote, but I'm going to give your part of your Constitution back." The first up until 1913, the states. Elected the state legislature elected their U.S. senators. Very few people know that now because they don't teach it. But so in the last 110 years, we've let the people. And how's it worked out for us? It's not that good. If you put our success on a graph, mm-hmm. 1913 was the turning point. I've always said when America's gone and a historian's right about what happened to America, I think 1913 will be the year that made the difference. We quit letting the states elect their senators. We got the Federal Reserve, the IRS, the trust. I mean,
Yeah.
That was a very unlucky year.
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right about all that stuff. Yeah. When we, yeah, my son says two wolves and a sheep. That's what we do not want to have. We want to have a republic, don't we? It is interesting to think about how we could take power back. And of course, when we looked at the Dobbs decision of Roe v. Wade taking that back, I had said for the longest time before the Supreme Court agreed with me, they didn't know I was saying it, but I said, you know, we ought to go back to Andrew Jackson here in Tennessee. You know, the Supreme Court had said that he could move the Cherokee. And he started moving the Cherokee. They didn't like what it looked like. And I think it was a bad policy, but they said, all right, they met within a year and said, no, we take it back. You know, we got a new opinion and you can't do it. And he said, well, you've given me your opinion. Let's see you enforce it. And that there is a check and balance. That's the important part about that, is that there's checks and balances. And so with Roe v. Wade, that was a Texas case. I've said for the longest time, I said, well, the Texas state should have said, well, the Supreme Court's made their decision about when life begins. That's kind of interesting, but it doesn't really have anything to do with us. We're going to make our laws about that. And that's essentially what the Dobbs situation has done. And it raised a lot of alarms because it started pointing to the 10th Amendment. And I think that is the key thing, that states need to have the backbone to take this. But for the most part, nobody wants to make these decisions. They want to pass it off to somebody else, and so they don't. It's a hot potato, and they would like to use it as an election issue, but they don't actually want to do anything with it. And ultimately, it gets passed off to either the bureaucracy, which doesn't have to run for election, or it gets passed off to the Supreme Court, which doesn't have to run for election.
You know, nullification. People say, "Well, we tried that in 1860; didn't work." I was never a dope smoker. I was always a better high life man myself, but I'd greatly admire the dope smokers for nullifying the federal law on marijuana. I mean, you can call it what you want. They nullified. They said the federal government, you know, go on off. We're going to sell marijuana on the street, and regardless what you say. Mm-hmm. And people say nullification won't work. Nullification will work.
Yes,
you just have enough backbone to make it work.
That's right.
And
that's a great example, too, because it's always whenever you start talking about, well, we need to make some of these decisions locally, it's usually the left that freaks out and then starts talking about civil war and secession, all the rest of stuff. And if you bring up the issue that they actually want to have, which is medical marijuana or recreational marijuana, even Jeff Sessions, as much as he hated it, he never came after it because he didn't want everybody to see that it had basically been a bluff that they'd been running for a long time, right?
It is bluff, and we need to talk about that. You know, that was the rebirth of nullification.
Yes.
And we nullified that, we can nullify other things, and we just need to do it. And like I say, it's kind of strange that it came from the left, and not only the left, the dope-smoking left, were the ones that successfully nullified federal law. Gotta buy those boys. They may not know they done it.
That's right. They don't know that they did it because they're smoking dope.
Tell them he did it.
We'd have to wait till they sober up so we can explain to them what they really did. That's great. Well, I'm glad that it's been taken care of in terms of pistol brace and things like that. It's going to have a big impact. It still is going to be something that people are going to be talking about around the country, and I think it's going to energize people before this August special session. So hope you guys hang in there. And don't let that happen, because we've got a good group of people in the Tennessee legislature, and I don't want to see them discredited by doing something that is just a bunch of virtue signaling to celebrities and leftists.
You don't have to worry about the House told him and the Senate told him, you don't have the votes. We're not passing red flag laws. That's third world stuff. Good. In America, you listen until you're proven guilty. We're not going to go there and let you be guilty and I have to go to court and prove that I'm not crazy. How could I prove I'm not crazy? You know, I'm crazy. I wouldn't be serving in the legislature. I mean, so automatically crazy right off the bat. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. You need to come back. I felt like I was at a really busy time when you were there, and I didn't have enough time to spend with you. But I'd like to show you through the Capitol, and you need to come back this next year.
I'd love to do that.
But we'll be glad to do that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it's always great to have you back on. We want to keep track with what's going on, but a lot of good news there about what is happening. I like the fact that you've already taken care of the non-commandeering aspect of it. You know, if you don't call it that, whatever. You guys have got that taken care of in terms of gun control, because it really is off the rails It's not just the elected representatives in Congress who were talking about infringing the Second Amendment, but now it's just become a bureaucratic prerogative that they've claimed they've got. You guys have got that checked. Good to hear that. And I hope you guys hang tough on this August special session.
One last little thing before we go. Everybody talks about the checks and balances between the legislative branch and executive branch and the judicial branch. But the ultimate check, the one that works good, you don't even think about it. The one that the checked end all check is the Second Amendment when you've got an armed citizen check on the armed government.
That's right.
That's the ultimate check in a system of checks and balances. And these civics teachers don't even mention it, but that's the one that keeps us free. That's the one that keeps Dr. Evil from coming in on us.
That's right.
The American South may save the world.
That's right. That's right. And refusing to comply, you know, and that's one of the things that we saw. We came here in August of 2020. We had to go to North Carolina for a relative, and we came back through Tennessee, and it's like, these people are not wearing the masks. that is really, they're not complying with this stuff. So that means that they haven't been captured.
I tell people that smart people took the vaccine, but the wise people did.
That's a good way to put it. The people who had too much education, and they've been sitting in the classroom for too long, looking at somebody lecturing them at the front of the class, and they've bought into that argument from authority. That's exactly right.
Well, David, my battery's about to go out, so yes. I'm going to say goodbye, and we'll do it again.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Senator Frank Nicely in Tennessee. You're doing a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.